Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome back to Believe in Softball. I'm your host, Jenna Becerra, and however you got here today, whether it was an audio podcast platform like Apple, Spotify, etc., or watching on YouTube, thank you. Subscribe and rate the show wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter /X at Believe in Softball. That's BLEAV. And yes, as usual, there's merch for you. Click the link in the bio on either of those pages or go to shop.believe.com to purchase three different shirts available for you in three different colors. All right, let's go through today's batting order. First, we'll be covering our bases. I'll share some call-outs from the softball world. Then we'll head into today's interview with Brittany McKinney. She played the game, she's coached the game, she covers the game, and it's just a little coast-to-coast action with her ACC experience. And then we'll end things with the foul tip of the week, where we share tips to help us get better. All right, let's go. Covering our bases. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. And again, the big opportunity with Rip It Sports also starts here. If you haven't taken advantage yet, what are you doing? Because I'm actually going to see a lot of family this week. I'm going to see my niece, some cousins, some of my cousins' kids, and just a lot of strong, active girls and women in my life. So I'm going to share the love with them and you, of course. And the best part is not only the gear, but it's their mission to elevate female athletic performance. They understand that women and girls deserve gear specifically tailored to our needs. Got to fit right, perform well, and meet our unique demands. So the great news is that Rip It is offering an exclusive 15% discount. Just use the code JENNA15 when you shop at ripit.com. That's JENNA15. This is your chance to experience the same quality gear that helps so many women and girls excel. And college softball, once again this weekend, did not disappoint. I'm going to talk about what I actually got to witness in person. I called two different series this past weekend, and they were two of the biggest, two ranked matchups in the country. So the first one, no surprise, UCLA at Stanford. And you know what? Obviously, the biggest thing that came out of this one was the viral clip, actually, of the obstruction call. I was on the call for the first two games. This was in game one in the ninth inning. I've talked about it a few times on the D1 Softball podcast and on In the Circle, so I'm just going to hit you with the headlines right now. Flat out, it was just a bad call. I don't see how it aligns even with the new rules this year. The catcher's position was fine. Her feet were actually inside the plate. It was even a textbook attempt, honestly. It was a one-hop throw slightly up the line. She followed it. There was a clear path to the plate for the runner. She didn't even need to hook slide or get around it or anything because she had the path, and the runner was also out by a mile. So she literally slid into the glove of Ali Kaneshiro. The home plate umpire was right there and got the original call right, called her out. What made it worse was overturning a correct call to the wrong call. And on air, I audibly gasped in the moment. Probably the first time I've ever done that. I mean, as announcers, if we're honest, we have some reactions that we do silently to ourselves. But I've never actually let anyone hear or see what I'm doing or thinking in some of these moments. But it was a big one. And if I'm a coach, I tell the defense, you know, do the exact same thing 10 out of 10 times. I mean, a great throw, a good job with the tag, and the spirit of the rule is supposed to be about safety. And there was nothing unsafe about this play. Like, it's not supposed to be a technicality that this is called. It's supposed to be about safety at the root of it. And it took away from probably the best pitcher's duel that we've seen all season. At the same time, Stanford, you got to score to win in that situation, right? The Bruins out hit them in game one, 8-5, too. So there weren't any other plays at the plate. They were the closest ones to scoring, even had this call stood. UCLA very well could have won the game anyway. I mean, they obviously did the next 2 days with the sweep. Wasn't a fluke, but it just shouldn't have happened like that. For the Bruins, though, an absolutely huge weekend. And I think it just shows that they are who they are for a reason in terms of their culture, their history, their foundation in college softball. Everyone doubted them early on. And if they stopped paying attention to them as a team since then, they were not aware of the team that they are now in April, about to go into May. And Taylor Tinsley said on the D1 softball podcast earlier this season, you know, she had confidence then in herself and in her team. And now we're seeing some of those results. And leading up to the broadcast, Kelly Inouye-Perez said, she tells them all the time, like, if you work hard and you go all in, the game pays you back. She really believes that. And she had said she feels like it's starting to pay Taylor Tinsley and Caitlin Terry, their other pitcher who was in the circle, back. And we saw that. And also, by the way, congrats to her on 800 wins as a head coach at UCLA. So she's officially joined her predecessors, Sue Inquist and Sharon Backus, to surpass that milestone. And the only other active Pac-12 head coach who has done that is Heather Tarr. And that was earlier this season, too. It's a lot of wins. It's a big deal. So lots of good stuff coming out of that one. I would say UW and Cal is the other series that I was on, the Sunday game, game three. The first two games, you know, the Huskies took them pretty decisively. But the big thing that stood out was the walk-off in game three when I was there. This is a top 20 matchup. Two top home run hitting teams in the Pac-12, Cal number one, Washington number two. And it just wasn't over. You know, in game three, they were just exchanging blows back and forth. And for Cal, it's a huge top 10 win. That's going to give them a better position for sure the rankings, but really more importantly, the seedings for Pac-12 tournament and the NCAA tournament potentially. So this was just really big for the Bears to be able to pull that out and avoid the sweep. The other thing that stood out to me is just the staffs on both sides. I mean, UW, you have almost all alums. I talk about them all the time because under Heather Tarr, it's former Huskies, Victoria Hayward, Courtney Gaino, who have both been on the show as assistants. But then also you have Sis Bates as the director of player development, and then Sammy Reynolds, who was just on the team last year, and she's a student assistant this year. And then they all work with Lance Glasso, and that's a big deal. But then on Cal's side too, it's all Pac-12 people. You know, there's obviously Chelsea is an alum from Cal herself, but Kylie Cuoco played at Oregon. Danielle O'Toole, the new pitching coach, played at Arizona, as we know. And then Brandon Telesco, the hitting coach this year, went to ASU. His wife, Marissa Stankiewicz, is actually the director of operations, also went to ASU. So just so many Pac-12 ties. And we see similar things all over the country, right? Like we see Northwestern's Jordan Rudd, who's been on this show. You know, she's now coaching at Purdue. And we talked to Kate Drohan this season about how she was extra fired up to play them this year in the Big Ten, right? So I think these are the types of things, though, that are just great examples of paying it forward. And it's just in action. Also, Oregon Senior Day. So keeping it on the West Coast, because this was just such a great moment. Hannah Delgado, as we've seen sort of in the news, she had a season-ending injury the previous weekend. She dove for a ball in the outfield at Arizona, and she hit her head straight into the wall. So she was under observation for a few days. And then they did announce, you knew she was going to be okay. But, you know, it's always a bummer when your senior year and even your college career ends early, especially against your will. I actually saw that play out before, too. You know, Taylor Becerra, who was on the show in season one, played at ASU, and they were playing at Stanford, and she tore her ACL, and it was one of the last weekends, and she was on crutches for her senior day, right? And she talked about how she worked through that. So it's rough. But what they did for her was really cool. So she got the start in center field for senior day, where her usual position, had her neck brace on and everything. And of course, they subbed her out right away. But she did get a standing ovation when she came off the field and got to have her moment. And I just love moments like that and the thoughtfulness that was behind it, too. So kudos to Melissa Lombardi, another friend of the show, her staff, the program, and also Oregon State, who they were playing, because they also shared it on social media, which was just pure class. And also pure class is our friend Rhiannon Potke. So she was a guest back in season one. She's a journalist, longtime sports journalist. She's from Ventura County, where I'm from. So shout out to the 805. And now we're actually colleagues at D1 Softball. She's a fantastic writer. So it's been full circle. She used to cover me when I played in high school. Now we're covering the game together. It's awesome. But she started an organization called Goods for Greatness that I've talked about before, but it's been a while. So it's a good reminder for some of the OGs, or if you're new here. Basically, the goal is to alleviate financial strain for kids who want to play sports. You know, you can donate gear. They'll pay the league fees for the kids, just different things like that. I actually donated a few years ago some of my old college stuff to benefit some kids locally. So Stanford Softball actually donated lots of gear, bats, helmets, bags, you know, the works. And somehow the timing worked out. It was like divine intervention that Rand and I were both visiting home at the same time. So I got to drive down the equipment and hand it off to her. And now it's off to some local high school programs who could really use it. So all of this to say, this organization is wonderful. If you're interested in donating or helping identify kids or groups that can benefit from this, check out goodsforgreatness.org. That's goods, the number four, greatness.org. Other friends from the 805 too, you know, past guests, Jessica Mendoza and my D1 Softball podcast co-host, Amanda Lorenz, they're actually on the board of this organization. So I'm just pretty proud and grateful for the efforts of some of these hometown heroines. And then to bring it home, just some of my other stuff going on. A new softball podcast for D1 episode came out this week. Amanda and I actually interviewed Virginia head coach Joanna Harden after they took the series from a top 10 Duke team. They're on a mission for their first NCAA tournament bid since 2010. She was awesome to talk to. Highly recommend. And the win and whiff of the week segment is a can't miss. So tune into that. And then in terms of what's coming up, I'm calling more games on TV with Pac-12 networks. Next up, after a quick break this week, a rare break, I'm calling Cal's midweek game on Wednesday hosting Nevada, and then the Oregon series at Stanford for the last Pac-12 games of the regular season. Like I said before, too, more postseason stuff coming soon. So someone else who has a lot of fun stuff coming soon in the regular season and the postseason is today's guest. So let's head into the interview. She is an ACC network analyst and North Carolina alum, Brittany McKinney. Brittany, we made it work. I'm so glad that we're finally connecting.
I know. This time of year, we were just talking about it. It's a little crazy to try and get on each other's schedule.
You said it. You said it. But in a good way, right? Like, we love it. That's why we do it.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think actually the priority in your life, even during season, of course, is your adorable son. So I feel like I want to start there, honestly.
Yes. Oh my gosh. He is a handful. He turned 2 in January. Lincoln. He loves going to ball games now. We take him to the baseball, softball games. He wakes up every morning, baseball, go ball. And it's like, if there's not a game today, it's a bad day for him. So that's really fun seeing him really involved in what we're doing and really enjoy it and just have a blast being there. As long as he has a hot dog and maybe some popcorn, that helps too.
Always. Doesn't that help all of us?
Right.
I mean,
right?
To be fair. That's what a cool way for him to grow up, though. I mean, obviously, like there's no way he wasn't going to grow up this way, right? But still.
Well, I tell you what, it's really cool. Like after the game, win or lose, when they lose, we give him a minute, but he just waits to go run out on the field. The girls hug him, throw him. They kind of helps him, like, you know, big picture in life. And I think that it's as great for him as it is for them that, like, you know, yeah, maybe that game didn't go how he wanted, but, you know, we still got a lot to live for in this life. So he's been great. He's got 25 sisters. So it's just awesome. And yeah, he's really lucky to grow up this way for sure. And we are too.
Of course. Yeah. That was honestly one of my favorite things when I was in college, was like the coach's kids and just like the extended people connected to the program, because it felt like they were all part of the family too, you know?
Yeah. I think it's really hard in softball to have a work-life balance, because I don't think it's possible. I think you have to integrate the two into your life. You have to bring your life into your work, and sometimes your work comes into your life. But when you can bring your family into your softball world, you know, it shows these young players too that, you know, that they can be women coaches and still have a family and incorporate that into their daily life. And it takes a village. I mean, Taryn brings him to the office more, probably once or twice a week. And he's just running around and different people will watch him. And it's just been a really great opportunity for him and us here.
That's something that's actually popped up a lot recently as I've been chatting with coaches. As we have more females in these head coaching roles, which is amazing. But, you know, they played, right? So they actually, a lot of them I've noticed, and they'll bring it up, like they had coaches who were doing the mom grind on top of just their careers that they were pursuing, and being able to see that is like what helped a lot of them actually decide to go down this path. So, and it's like, we can do whatever we want, right? But to know that that's an option is really important.
I don't think I saw it very much when I was playing. Did you?
A little bit, actually.
Really?
Two of my assistant coaches, they had young kids while I was.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I was lucky in that way, because I do think, to your point, like with Lincoln, it's like a breath of fresh air. And then you also do get to kind of see how it works, you know, long term. I don't think I understood it at the time, but now I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff. But I have to ask. Okay. So for people who don't know, it'd be weird if they didn't. But if they don't know, you were a catcher. Your wife, Taryn, kind of a big deal. I guess she was pretty good in the circle.
yeah, she was all right.
She was okay, yeah. We'll give her a little credit. But to have that kind of dynamic in the house, are you guys trying to influence Lincoln like one way or the other? Are you like, we like being catchers over here? And is Taryn kind of like, oh, I think maybe pitcher. Like, is there any of that going on?
A little bit, but I think we can both agree that being a parent of a pitcher sounds like the most horrific and torturous thing you could do in life. Like, I couldn't imagine just the pressure of wanting him to succeed so bad. I don't know how pitchers' parents do it, so I'd rather not be a pitcher parent for a selfish reason. But, you know, if it happens, it happens. But I props to all the pitcher parents out there. I don't that just looks hard.
It's a great point. And yeah, good luck to everyone who is in that position right now. But it takes a village, like you said, for anything like that. But I actually think that because you were a catcher too, you're already kind of used to, you know, taking care of your pitchers. It might not be a bad thing to have if you're a pitcher, to have a catcher parent to work with. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. Managing pitchers though, that's a lot. And raising a kid is kind of like managing a pitcher. I haven't thought of it that way.
It all comes back to the game.
Yeah. There we go. Full circle.
So obviously you all have a lot of Mississippi State gear, I'm sure, in your house, but when it comes to blue, the color blue, is there more Carolina blue or more Wildcat blue in your house, would you say?
Oh, you know, I would say, I don't know. That's a tough one. There's a lot. There's a lot of both, because I'm a bit of a hoarder and so is Taryn. So I'm trying to think, like, we have like our athletic wear closet in a spare room, and it's pretty even, you know. I'd like to say there's more Carolina blue, but she won championships, so she has a lot of that kind of gear. So she may trump me there.
Well, I'm sure Lincoln's got both. So we're all there.
Oh, yeah. 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 I think he has more Carolina blue for sure, though, especially after basketball season.
Fair enough. Also, it's such a pretty blue. Like, if we're just purely looking at aesthetics, it's really
perfect.
Nice.
I mean, can't beat it, I think.
Obviously, not like you're biased or anything.
No, not at all.
But you're also from North Carolina, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously played in the ACC. You live in SEC country. You've lived in Pac-12 territory before too. Like, how is sort of that perspective been as you're sort of covering the game?
You know, that's interesting you say that. I was just thinking about that this morning. Like, you know, I'm immersed in the SEC, but I cover the ACC, and then coming from the Pac-12, I'm like, I feel like I have a really good grasp on the softball world. Maybe not so much Big Ten, but I mean, Big 12 is hard to miss. But when I was in the Pac area, I always felt that they didn't get enough recognition. Like, I thought for sure when we were they were the best conference I have seen, like top to bottom, just athlete wise. And that's coming from the SEC when we went there. And I think it was just because they weren't on TV as much. People couldn't sit there and watch the level of play. And it was kind of a different kind of game. It wasn't as flashy. It was like going to work every day and then in the SEC, you get the glitz and glamour and the production and all this fun. And not to say they're not good at all, but they're very good and they may be the best conference. But I think it's really hard to differentiate the two. But I think it just comes down to a lack of visibility that people don't get to see the pack as much then. But I love being around that tradition of the pack. That was really cool to me. The ACC is, I still feel like it's hasn't reached its potential. I think that it's been really fun to see the growth with Duke and Clemson and Virginia Tech really coming along, and always Florida State, you know, being right there. But I think Florida State getting better and then Duke and Clemson being better has pushed Florida State, and then everybody else around them are like, hey, if they can do that, so can we. You see Virginia this weekend taking the series against Duke. So I think this conference is really growing in the right direction and really competitive. I think their schools are starting to see the PAC and the SEC investing in their softball programs, and we're seeing that investment in the ACC. So I think they're all a little bit different, but like you can see it, just the game's growing and the parity is just across the board. So that was a long-winded answer. Sorry.
No, I mean, it was an in-depth question, really. Yeah. Like, how do you summarize, you know, all of your experiences? I felt like it's that was actually pretty good. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing that I find cool, too, is I think it's fascinating that you've been able to see up close, like, three different conferences, at least, in depth, because it is different when you see teams in person. Like, I mean, watching games in general helps, obviously. So even if it's on TV, like actually seeing teams play versus just kind of like reading what's on paper, I think makes a big difference. But in person, I feel like is just next level.
Yeah. Yeah. You get a sense of like their personality and the way they go about their business, I guess. And you can see like who's really sharp, who's warming up, who has their stuff together. I mean, you watch Oklahoma. I remember seeing them at Palm Springs a couple of years ago. They show up, their managers show up in these black SUVs, get everything set up for warm-ups, and they come out like they're a freaking army. I mean, it's like regimented, and you're like, oh, okay. It all makes a little bit more sense now. And then you can see that with other teams that you don't really get, you know, you read some articles or maybe see some highlights. You don't get that kind of sense of, you know, discipline and like just execution from teams.
Yeah. You actually just made me realize too, we talk about with when kids are getting recruited too, like how coaches are going to look at you just as much as your interactions, like with your parents or your teammates or kind of like off the field, or at least not between the white lines. Cause that gives an extra glimpse. And that's kind of what we're talking about. Actually, it just kind of clicked in my head that
yeah,
you do kind of see those things when you get to watch teams in person.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember when I was recruiting, I'd go see a kid and they may get one ball that game, right, on defense. So, you know, you can't really rely on what's going to happen in game. You've really got to pay attention to what's happening before the game, after the game, to really get a sense of the whole package. And if that kind of person fits the program or where you want your program to be.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I think, you know, speaking of Palm Springs, one of my favorite takes that I've seen from your podcast, Up the Coast with Alex, is I loved when you were talking about the best parts of Mary Nutter. And both of your answers couldn't have been better, honestly.
Not softball related at all.
No, which felt accurate, you know, like, or it felt genuine to me. Like, you said dogs, and I was like, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because I went for the first time in years this year to that tournament. Yeah. And so when you said that, I was like, oh man, yeah, that's so true.
And some of those things, puppers.
Right? You don't get to necessarily experience that as much when you're playing and you're so like in the zone, but like I got to sort of absorb it all a little bit more this last time. And then Alex with her micheladas, I was like, I did not have one, but that's a great call.
Right. I feel like she really sold them really well. Like, I was like, dang, I don't really drink micheladas, but I will occasionally. But now I feel like I want one, but I feel like I need to be in Palm Springs. No, but right. that environment, I think this was the first year I haven't been in a few years. But it's so much fun. The dogs, the micheladas and a dog. I mean, if you can do both and watch a softball game, you can't beat it. Right.
Exactly. You guys were so right. Like when I watched that, I was like, these are my people. You know,
yeah, we're going to have to go. We'll have to go back.
Yeah, definitely. And now I'm like, oh, well, I definitely have to have one next year, you know, like, because yeah. I didn't have a Michelin. I saw plenty of pups, which was very exciting, but well, I set my game up.
We'll have to do a rate your Michelada from Palm Springs next year. See if it, I mean, Alex really does love Micheladas and she has a really high standard. So I feel like they must be pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, consider the source, right? Like right. What's, and she's, I mean, I remember them serving alcohol, like obviously didn't apply when you're playing, but I remember like they've done this for a long time, you know, and they have all the food trucks and everything too. But I remember that being a thing, like right in the middle of all the fields.
Right. And nowadays you get stadiums that serve alcohol, but when I was playing, yes. And I'm certain when you were playing, that wasn't a thing. Like it was weird. It was really weird. Like, huh, that's odd. Okay, maybe we'll get a little rowdy. Maybe it's be like a football game, but no, it was weird. But now it's kind of weird if there's not a beer stand at a softball true. Field.
It's like more complete. And actually seeing the parents like after their kids would play a game, just kind of like, oh, I got to take a breath. I got to decompress here. And like that right. was actually pretty entertaining. I was like, oh yeah, that's a whole other dimension to this whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah, probably not a pitcher's parents. They're probably somewhere in the bathroom crying or...
Good point. Yeah, these were not actually, now that I think about it. Yeah, position players. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot easier to be with their parents, I think.
Exactly. That's so funny. Oh, man. I haven't seen as many ACC teams play in person this year as I would like to, but I've been following the conference for a while. I mean, some personal ties, like my coach from college at Stanford, John Rittman, is the head coach of Clemson. Lonnie Alameda at Florida State, she was a longtime Stanford assistant before mm-hmm. I played, but so many of the alums like know her and love her. And then I've just interviewed folks on the podcast and stuff as well. And then obviously the move coming up with Stanford and Cal going to the ACC, it's going to be a big part of my world moving forward. So I'm excited to kind of join you in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, how about that? I still don't know if I fully digested that Stanford and Cal are coming to the ACC. The ties to Stanford with Rittman and Lonnie, I actually just talked to Lonnie yesterday a little bit about it. And she's excited selfishly because her family's still there and, you know, she can go and her family can come watch. And, you know, I think everybody's biggest concern is the travel for the West Coast players. I mean, I'm sure they'll figure it out. I don't know. I think the concern is valid, but I think for the ACC, they're only going to elevate. They're only going to make it better. And I think there's going to be good competition for Stanford and Cal. And I think academically, it's a good fit for conference. I'm excited about it selfishly too, just like Lonnie. I would love to see Cal and Stanford in the ACC. I wish geographically it made a little bit more sense, but competition wise, I mean, you couldn't be more excited about bringing those two programs. I mean, they've been to the World Series, they have high standards, and they're only just going to elevate everybody around them. I mean, Florida State's going to have to be better. Duke's going to have to be better. Clemson, I mean, even the bottom's going to have to be better to keep up. So I think it's only going to help softball wise for the conference, but at the same time, I do feel for the travel and all the logistics. And I think the biggest part for me is, you know, these players from California, even if from Southern California or the Bay Area, they went to school there probably partly so their parents could see them play. And I don't know if all of them will have the ability, you know, travel as much as they are going to and see their daughters play. So I guess that's the heart part of me, the emotions tied to it.
Aligned with basically everything you said, including the, I haven't fully digested it yet. Cause it's like, we're still in our season right now. So we're still trying to see, watch things play out and all that. But I think like the second the World Series is over, we'll be like, oh wow. All of the realignment will be real. Right. So it's
right. All of it. Yeah. I'm glad that the Pac-12 tournament's at Stanford, though. You're going to be able to be around and see it all for the last time. That's got to be exciting.
I am, and I am very excited about it, too. I think, you know, they're redoing their whole stadium. Literally the day after Super Regionals, they're starting, like, breaking ground construction. But, like, to be able to sneak in, like, hosting something like this before that is pretty exciting. Just to have
What are they doing to it?
They're doing a lot. So they are right as it sits right now. I mean, it's a beautiful ballpark. Like there are some like grassy hills on each side next to the batting cages that are covered, and they're kind of like pavilion style with bathrooms and bullpens and all that stuff. What they're going to do actually is kind of make it more of like a concourse. So they're going to build up. They'll have like another level. The one thing for me that I'm like, I love the stadium, especially once they put those batting cages in, because we didn't have that when I played. We had to go to baseball if it rained or whatever. But the one thing for me was the press box. Little small. It was like my only complaint, right? And of course, that's not everyone's number one priority. Right. But they're going to build that out, which I'm very, very excited about too. And I think there's going to be like a treehouse like out potentially out in the outfield and like some fun areas. And yeah, it's just – it's already a good facility, but it's just going to be sort of – like you said, these teams who are investing –
investment in the sport. The schools investing in their sports. They're seeing, I mean, especially after women's basketball, right? They're like, holy cow, maybe these people were right. If you invest in women's sports, you can get some return on your investment. So that's exciting to see. But I went out to Stanford once for a series and I loved it. I mean, it was just like a very open, airy, just felt good. It felt like a good place to watch ball. So I'm excited to know that's happening.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And also the weather's, I think, going to be great, which is always a win. So
yeah, that's true. That helps.
Yeah. But it's funny because, you know, I love actually that your podcast is called Up the Coast, because in my head I'm like, well, now it's up the coasts, plural, maybe, you know, like thinking about both sides.
We had the hardest time coming up with a name. And then Alex was like, it'll come to me. It'll come to me. I promise. And then one morning, I think it was like the morning before we were going to record our first episode, she's like, Up the Coast. I'm like, yes, but we're going to have the other coast. She goes, but it's still up the coast. Like we're not staying up the east. So I'm like, Alex, all right, nice job. So I can't take any credit for that. She did. That was her for sure.
I mean, spot on. It is. Yeah. It still works. Yeah. I like it, you know? Yeah. And I know you mentioned too, that's why I like it too, because the obvious ones to talk about and that get a lot of media attention are obviously some of the teams we've already mentioned, like Florida State, Duke, Clemson, Virginia Tech. But you said it too, that the rest of the ACC is getting better, right? Mm-hmm. And is starting to rise along with that core four, let's call them.
Yeah. I like that. Nice.
Yeah, sure. Just came up with that on the spot. but outside of those, of that core four, like what would you want people to know more about the landscape of the ACC?
You know, you see like this year, Georgia Tech, they're killing it at the plate. I mean, they're right there behind Virginia Tech in home run numbers. They, Coach Morales redid her coach, brought in a whole new coaching staff, and they've really turned their program around. When I played, they were top notch and they've kind of fallen off. They're coming back around. And then Virginia, they've got a young pitcher, Eden Bigham, and she's the real deal. I think if they could get just a little bit more offense around her, I mean, my goodness, they'll be really good for the next 2-3 years. And then like Notre Dame, they have great pitching, really, really good pitching. And I feel like they've always been like just that close to like turning the next page, because they've been a postseason team, but you know, they're just so close and there's just like that one piece missing. And then you look at Louisville, they lost a lot in the transfer portal last year. And I was kind of worried about how they were going to rebuild, and they're chugging right along. So I think, you know, like the Louisville's and the Notre Dame's kind of get lost in the mix because your core four, you know, are kind of dominating the headlines. But, you know, I think the ACC tournament's going to have some upsets early on because you put your best against somebody else's best. I think anybody in the ACC can beat just about anybody else that's going to be in that tournament. So I think and then Carolina, can't not talk about my team.
Of course.
Megan Smith coming in, their offensive numbers are ridiculous. They're batting almost 100 points higher than they were last year. So I think there's just really good things coming and a lot of new things, seeing that coming into the new era of softball, I guess, you know, just like the offense and the analytics and investing in that kind of stuff, new minds getting into the game. So yeah, you can physically see the progression and where teams are headed this season.
Right. I did get to see a couple ACC teams. I saw Notre Dame actually in Palm Springs, which was cool. And then Georgia Tech and Clearwater. And they took their lumps early in the season, right, in terms of like the win and loss column. But they were answering offensively a lot. Right. Like I remember thinking like, you know what, like they'll give up runs and then they score right after pretty often against some good teams. And I was like,
was it the Georgia game that Georgia like put up 8 runs in the first and then they scored 7 right back after that?
Yeah. I think it was something like that. Yeah. And even I think Stanford hit like a ton of home runs against Georgia Tech, which was, you know, a new thing, new development for them this year a little bit. But Georgia Tech hit home runs too in that game, you know, like it was, I was like, wow. Okay. So I like to hear just from your, you know, having been sort of in the mix every single weekend, like.
Yeah. I remember watching them in Clearwater and honestly, I'm like, ooh, this might be a tough week for Georgia Tech. But then I was like, dang, this team is gritty. They stepped in the back box and took their hacks. I mean, like first pitch, there was no fear. There was no, oh, this is Stanford. They were in the World Series last year. There was no fear. And I was like, all right, this is impressive. I mean, just a team that's trying to take that next step, getting rid of that fear and playing freely was really exciting to see. And I think they've done that for most of the season. And they're still missing, you know, I think some pitching depth, but once they get that, I mean, their offensive philosophy is there. They're not afraid to miss big, and that first week was so fun.
Yeah. Well, that's what's interesting about the season too, you know, seeing how things play out so early on versus how they're even playing out now. I feel like it's so easy as fans too. Fans get really like reactive, you know, like to things that are happening week to week, but the teams like have to block that noise, right? And just focus on their vision, their plan. And so to actually start to see those things kind of come to fruition, like that's one of my favorite parts at least.
Well, you saw it this weekend with UCLA, right?
Yes, exactly.
I've seen it with Florida State. Everybody wrote them off. Oh, this is a down year for UCLA. This is a down year for Florida State, you know. But they forget that coaches are there to develop players, right? Like there is a player development aspect that happens throughout the season. If you're as good as you are in February as you are in May, then that's not a, to me, not a good season, right? Even if you're winning throughout, if you're better in May than you were in February, that says a lot about you as a coach and your staff and your program and how you develop players and put them in positions to fail early in the season and then put them in positions to see where they're most successful. I think Lonnie Alameda does that the best with her pitchers. Like she's going to put them in situations that, you know, early on that they probably don't want to be in, but just to see how they react to it. And then, you know, put them in a situation where they're not used to being. We saw Kat Sendrikoch last year. Remember, she was a starter all the time and then she became a reliever and, you know, she wasn't thrilled about that at first. And then she really bought into this and became a huge part of their program or their program last season and their success. So I think Kelly at UCLA and Lonnie, they know exactly what they're doing and they're all about developing players because they're playing for the big picture. So everybody that wrote them off early in the season, you know, they weren't worried about that noise.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's a reason these programs like are there usually every, obviously the ending last year, not great for UCLA, but in a general sense, Florida State and UCLA in the past, you know, however long, they're there, right? And there's a reason because it's a new team every year. So for them to be able to do that sustainably, it's like there's something there, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the hardest part. I mean, being at the top is hard, but being able to stay there consistently, you know, that's the special part.
Absolutely. So much easier said than done. Oof, oh, yeah. Man. But in your case too, getting into the media side of things, because obviously that you're doing that a ton now, which is amazing. You coached for a while. You kind of mentioned that a little bit earlier. I think, by the way, I went deep in the archives, so forgive me on this, but in your bio at UNC, it said that your dream job at that time would be to be like in the FBI or the Secret Service. Yeah. So a lot of different interests, right? So how have you navigated that with your career?
You know, I gave up on my FBI dreams. I had a actually funny story. I had a roommate that didn't play sports, and she was being interviewed by, she had applied for the FBI and didn't tell anybody because you can't tell anybody that you apply. And these random people showed up in SUVs at our house to go through our house and all of her stuff. And I'm like, no, maybe it's not for me. So I kind of switched gears. But, you know, getting into media, I didn't know that was really something I wanted to do. I remember, as a kid, though, instead of watching like Saved by the Bell before school, I was always watching SportsCenter. I love all sports. I could talk any sport. But I actually started my career as a firefighter in Mississippi at Oxford, and I was full-time doing that. And this was when the streaming SEC Plus really started becoming a thing, and they needed somebody to be their analyst. And I was there, and my schedule was pretty good that I could make most of the games. I'm like, sure, I'll give it a try. You know, how hard could it be? It's not easy. But I got my foot in the door there, and I really enjoyed it. And it was the first time that I wasn't either coaching or playing, and I had started this new career and I was missing softball. So it was a great avenue for me to still, you know, stay connected. I don't think I ever saw it as something that I would try and run with, but it's just something that I could stay a part of the game. And fortunately for me, that I was able to continue to do it and have different opportunities since then.
See, that's the type of thing that I think is so cool, because I feel like, and maybe it's the same in other sports, but with softball players, I really feel like there's some sort of tie that everybody has to maintain because they do miss it. Like if you do kind of step away for a little bit, you're like, oh, I just have this itch a little bit to be involved somehow. And it could look a million different ways. Broadcasting is one of those ways, and being sort of on TV and the media side of things. And I just think it's cool that you've had such a breadth of experience in your career. Being a firefighter is a big deal. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah. You know, I've been able to see the game from a lot of different angles, I think, from a player to a coach to a spouse of a coach to an analyst to doing studio. So I've been very lucky and fortunate to be able to get a lot of different angles of the game and be able to, you know, see it from different perspectives. And so I kind of feel for the players. I feel for the coaches. You know, I get the grind of the season, and, you know, I try not to be too hard on anybody because everybody's good now, right? Like it's hard. It's hard to win. It's really, really hard to win.
Yeah, man, you're so right. That's the thing too, is like, I feel like on the media side, tell me what your experience has been, but sometimes when, obviously on this side of things, we talk about rankings and we talk about like, what do we think the tournament field will look like and sort of these different narratives that float around. But as a former player, you're kind of wired to like not worry about that stuff. Mm-hmm. But then it is something that comes into play, obviously, when you're discussing and covering teams. So sometimes I find myself like with this internal, like, okay, let's figure out like some sort of balance.
Right. Like we need to focus on today, right? Like we need to focus on, we take care of today, then the postseason will take care of itself. But you also, I mean, it's so important now to try and get a top 16 seed, a top 8 seed, like coasting. I think it's more important now than it's ever been. So I think coaches are concerned about that. And I've seen it kind of get in the way of coaches being like, all right, we take care of this, then we sweep here and we do that. And then we're going to host. We're going to get to host. And it's like, focus here. Like you can see like looking too far ahead when, you know, people like us start talking about, hey, this team's got a chance to host. And, you know, it's really hard to, you have that excitement of, hey, we've had a good year and we're going to get rewarded. But, you know, you still got 3 weeks to take care of business. You can't let up now because, you know, your players are going to feel that, you know, if you start looking ahead. And so this is the time of year where it really separates like how disciplined you are as a player and as a coach to, you know, one game at a time. These midweeks, you know, they can come up and bite you. And you saw, I don't know if you saw Texas A&M decided, you know, we'll just cancel ours. We're not going to take that risk.
I did. Yep.
I have so many feelings on that.
It's the same because whenever anything like rules or like strategies or things, I feel like it's kind of a moving target a little bit, to be honest, with what the committee decides they want to focus on each year. So you can't really like overanalyze. Like 1 year it was like very, very much RPI. I mean, every year they look at RPI, right? But 1 year it was like all about RPI. Last year it was like all about top 10 wins. Like it changes all the time. So if it takes away, whether it's that or a rule or something, from just playing the game, that's when I that's when like the media part of me is kind of like, well, do I really want to push these narratives? You know, it just makes me think through it a little bit more.
Yeah, I think the way the system is set up right now is not perfect. I don't think any postseason system is set up, not even college football, yeah, who has all the resources, right? They haven't figured it out. I don't think we've figured it out. I think we could do a lot better. And I think the more investments and the more we talk about it, the more pressure will put onto the people at the big table to try and make an imperfect system a little bit better. But you're right. It's hard to be critical, and it's hard for the coaches because they don't know, should I schedule top 10 teams this year, or should I worry about the wins, or, you know, all that goes into, you know, making your schedule. And I wish they had more guidance and clarity of what matters when it comes to postseason seeding.
Agreed. Very much agreed. But to your point earlier, we've seen teams who just kind of stay focused one game at a time, like a UCLA, like a Florida State. Mm-hmm. Does help, right?
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, if you just rely on that, like, you'll be okay, you know, right, even if the hosting and the seeds aren't perfect, you'll be in a good place, at least as a team.
Yeah, you want to be playing your best ball right now. And even if you're going on the road, if you have that confidence that you know that you're playing good softball, it's better than hosting and not playing your best ball, right? Like, you've gotten this host seed, but you're not playing very well, so it doesn't really matter. So send me on the road, but let me be playing my best, and that'll be all right.
Exactly. I mean, Kelly, I was talking about this season, and recently, like, I chatted with her before the Stanford series, before the broadcast, and she's like, I would take the hard path every time because I want to be the best at the end. Like, I want our team to feel like they're best at the end. Look at last year, you know, they hosted and they went 2-2 in the NCAA tournament, and they only lost 7 games all year. Their last 3, you know, in the Pac-12 tournament. And she's like, they had the Foramos of the world, you know, Brooke Giannis, all these things. And she's like, well, I would rather the team go through the hard now. And I think that applies.
Yeah, I think I saw her say something like she wishes last year's team would have had the losses this team had early in the season, that team had the test and had to overcome things. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, it is. I know it's funny when you hear coaches say like, oh, I wish our team would lose. Like, OU says that sometimes too, right? And then when it happens, everyone freaks out. But it's like kind of a good thing in some ways, right? Or at least that's how they frame it. And that's how they choose to run with it.
Yeah. The dynasty's not over, guys. OU's fine.
They're okay. They're not perfect. Wow. Who would have thought?
Right. Oh my goodness. You gotta love the passion, I guess you could say.
Oh.
People getting involved and having opinions.
Absolutely. Yes. Like that's what we love. That's what we want. That's what we need, you know, is for that kind of discussion. But I know I obviously chatted with you about your wife is a pitcher, but you also, in your experience as a catcher, you've been with a lot of great talent and that you've worked with, like Danielle Spalding, one of the most decorated UNC players ever. You played pro with her too, right?
Yeah.
Like you've had a lot of different experiences with her. So from your playing experience, not just with her, but in general, you know, it must be really cool to just have those like in your back pocket.
Yeah, I'm really lucky to have caught a lot of really good pitchers. I think the ACC has always had good pitching for a long time. But, you know, I caught Danielle Spalding and Lisa Norris played pro ball. And Amber Johnson, man, she was the first player that I ever saw throw over 70. she could sling it. And then going in the pro league, got to catch Megan Gibson. And I did bullpens with Monica Abbott. And, you know, it just... A lot of Morgan Mello. I mean, the list goes on, and it's just really, it was the most fun for me is just, can't forget Katie Burkhart. she was awesome. But just seeing how different they all are, but all have this level of success, like how they went about their bullpens and their regiments and how they spun the ball, what their focus was. And they were all different. Like, I mean, they had the core mechanics, I guess, but everybody was so different. And I always found that really interesting when I would have to go, especially in pro league, and learn these new pitchers that we didn't have the pitching coach there, and just what their mindset was and what their key thoughts were for each pitch. And they may do the same thing as another pitcher result-wise, but the process that goes into it is really different. So I go out and I'm watching these pitchers when I call games, like, yeah, she's a drop ball, curve ball, screw ball, change up, but how does she actually throw it? Like, how is she actually getting there? Because very few pitchers that I caught were remotely similar. And I found that really interesting.
That's always impressed me about catchers in general. I mentioned earlier, we talked about it, like the managing different pitchers and different personalities and things. And it makes sense why so many head coaches are former catchers, right? Because you do have that personality trait or that strength, basically, because you have to be a catcher.
Yeah, I was always super protective of my pitchers. like, that's my pitcher. Don't mess with them. You spend so much time together. And I think you see the work that they put in and how much, like, you know, just stress they go through and just wanting to be so good and the pressure they feel from their teammates, from their coaches, from the fans, from their parents. And, you know, you just develop this, like, want to protect them from everything. So you become, like, you know, their best friend on the field and their protector. And I don't know. That was always really big for me. And it came easy, I think, just to build that relationship where they could trust me and I could trust them. And I think for coaches, yeah, just coaching's about building those relationships. And I think a pitcher catcher, you have to be able to build that relationship if you want to have any success or have any fun at that. So I think coaches, you know, building those relationships, if you're a catcher, you know, you've been doing it for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's why I always look to catchers, because we talk about the deep pitching staffs and how there aren't just like the Terrence of the world who throw like every single inning anymore, right? You have to have the staff, but the consistent part often, I mean, you do see some catchers like rotating in and out and stuff, but oftentimes that's the consistency in the battery is the catcher. And it's just not easy. Like Coach Alster said recently on a call, she was like, you know, sometimes you don't know from the outside, like where a pitch was supposed to go versus where it went and how the catcher handled it. So you might not even understand how good they are just from that side, let alone everything else, you know?
Yeah. And Stanford's got one heck of a catcher. She's fun to watch. But yeah, I think when, especially at pitching changes, mid-game pitching changes, like if I'm warming up one pitcher, like we're on, we're good. Like, and then you bring in another pitcher mid-game and might be a lefty and has different kind of spin and you have to make that adjustment. I remember that being a challenge for me for sure. It's just like you get those five warm-up pitches and pitcher's ready, but hold on, can I get a couple more? Like, I know I've caught you a lot, but come on, I've been catching this drop ball pitcher for the past three innings. Let me get a couple more rise balls or something like that. Yeah, no, that's a great point.
That's so true. See, these are the little things that like maybe teammates can appreciate, right? Because they know what's going on. Coaches know what's going on. But from the outside, like there's so much more that goes into it sometimes than people realize.
For sure.
For sure. Yeah. Oh, man. Just thinking back. I mean, I feel like that pitcher-catcher dynamic never stops either. Like at the World Series this past year, there were a couple of alums just with the Stanford group of fans. And two of them played together. One was a pitcher, one was a catcher. And the pitcher was kind of like, wait, where are we going? Like, what direction do I need to go? And the catcher was like, let me take you like where you're supposed to go. You know, it was the same.
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, I've seen Danny Spaulding. She lives in Vegas now, but I've seen her a couple times in the past couple years, just different weddings or bachelorette parties. And yeah, it's definitely the same kind of dynamic. It's so funny. It's just like we go back to our old selves. And I mean, that's just like the foundation of a relationship and that never goes away. But yeah, that's really funny.
I love that though. And even when you reunite with teammates, all of a sudden certain dynamics come back into play, not just pitcher catcher, although I think that's probably the strongest dynamic. Even like you can tell like personalities of like an infielder versus an outfielder and like some of those things come into play and it's just funny. It makes you miss it too.
Yeah, it does. And now everybody's all across the country. And, you know, I think that's one of the hardest parts after you get done playing is that, you know, everybody goes their own way when you're just used to having your community, your group always there. And then it's just like, not only is your sport gone, your school, you're done with school, your community, your best friends, just everything just disappears all at once. It's not a gradual transition. So I think that's something else that we could do better at supporting student athletes for immediately post college, because your world changes really quickly.
Yeah, that's a whole, we could have a whole series actually on that, because you're so right. I remember the first year out was tough. And then I'd have younger teammates and they'd be like, was it this hard? I'm like, yes, it was this hard. You know, it's just something that, you know, we can, to your point, be better at, but we're still figuring it out.
Yeah. Especially like for me, I had no idea what I wanted to do. Like you said, I thought I was going to be in the FBI or something. So I just wanted to play ball. And then I graduated and I'm like, oh, where am I going to live? Like, what's going to happen here? Thankfully, I got a phone call to go play in the NPF. Or I was truly lost for a little bit. So yeah, that's something we could definitely have be better at and have a whole series on.
Normalize feeling lost, because we find ourselves in the end, but I think it's a lifelong process. Like I still don't, I feel like we both are like, we're saying earlier, like we don't fully know what we're doing still, you know, right. But we're here, we're learning, you know.
Hey, faking it till you make it, do the best you can at what you do, I guess. Yeah. I don't know what I want to do when I grow up. I'm just enjoying the moment, I guess.
Exactly. Like we said, like teams, just focus on one game at a time, you know, just live in the present.
Very easy to say. We're telling these teams and then we're talking about it in real life. We're like, oh, it's a lot harder than I've made it sound.
I know, right? It's, everything's easier said than done, for sure. Well, I don't want to let you go, but I will. except I do play a game with everyone that comes on the show. It's called Safer Out. And basically, I'll bring up a topic in softball related. And if you like it or you agree with it, you call it safe. Okay. If you don't like it, if you don't agree with it, you call it out.
Okay. Is there a video replay?
You can absolutely explain, you know, like in context. Okay. Yeah, definitely floor is yours. Okay. So the first one is catchers getting credit for no hitters, perfect games, some of those pitching stats that we typically see. Safer out.
Safe.
Agree.
Absolutely. They do it in the MLB. I mean, you look at the record books, you'll have your pitcher throw a no hitter. It says who's catching them. And not just from a selfish point. Like, I want other catchers to get that recognition. I mean, absolutely. Yes. Safe. Put them in there. I wouldn't say they're half of what happens, because the pitcher still has to throw the ball, hit their location. But I think catchers have a big part of it. And I feel like most pitchers would want their catcher there. Yes. Beside their name.
I feel like, do you think Taryn would agree from the pitching perspective?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. You're like, I'll convince her anyway. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I'll make her put the catcher's name first. Like, yeah. I couldn't imagine a pitcher that would be like, no, just me. Well, maybe one or two I could think of, but for the most part.
But minority, for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I like that. All right. Good.
That was the first one. Second one is a loaded one. Okay. The obstruction rule. Safer out.
I don't think anybody knows if they're safer out anymore.
Good point.
All right. So you have to have some sort of obstruction rule. And to me, the obstruction rule was created to prevent injury. I think we've lost. So I'm going to say safe, that there needs to be some sort of obstruction rule. I'm going to say out on how it is written and being implemented today, because we lost common sense. The common sense of it is just your game Friday. Was it Friday's game? Right.
Yeah.
Get out of here. That was like based on the rule. Like that was perfect. That was perfect receiving, clear front edge of the plate for the runner. I mean, that was just so mind blowing to me that even they went to review and then changed it. Like, I get it on the field. If they would have saw it and called it and missed it, you know, so you miss calls. Umpires are going to miss calls, but the fact that they went to the review and interpreted the rules somehow that I had no idea where that came from. So safe. Yes, there needs to be obstruction rule to prevent injury. Out on the way, the rule is lost its common sense today.
I think I'm fully aligned with you there. And yeah, same with that particular example that kind of went viral on Friday. I audibly gasped, Brittany, on air. I don't know if I've ever done that, when they overturned it. Because to your point, I think that was the part that was crazy. Because trying to make a judgment call full speed, totally. Like, anyone can make a mistake. Umpires are human, you know. But to have it right and then overturn it, that's what was, like, mind-blowing.
Yeah. There's another play that I saw this year. It was a rundown between third and home. And the catcher got called for obstruction. And first of all, how can you not obstruct in a rundown based on how it's written? Right. Yeah. So there's that part, just getting a rundown every time and then you're going to get obstruction. Secondly, the head coach reached out to one of the umpire coordinators for an explanation and was received the response that the catcher needs to be 7.5 inches inside the foul line.
That's wild.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Because I guess that leading edge is either 7.5 or 8.5 inches right there. So they're like, they need to be 7.5 inches inside the foul line.
I'm just like, okay, so should they pull out their rulers while they're, you know, yeah.
Should we draw another line on the field?
Yeah. So yeah,
that's just tough.
Wow.
We need to get back common sense.
I think common sense is a good way to kind of summarize it. You're right. Because it's like, what's the intent of the rule, right? And again, anything that takes away from letting people play feels off, you know? There's just, yeah, that could be its own series as well, actually.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the rules committee. Come on, guys. Come on.
I know. It's like we tried adjusting it too and still having problems, you know. We'll hopefully figure it out one day.
We'll get there.
All right, that was the second one. Okay. Third one is conference realignment, which we talked about a little bit, but safer out.
Out. I'm out on it. I mean, I think it's – I've accepted it. I've become excited about it. I'm excited for the ACC. I am devastated that the Pac-12 is no longer. That is devastating to me. I think it's obvious why this is happening with football. But it's the world we live in. Just because I don't like it doesn't mean that it's not going to have some benefits. I think we're going to see some benefits from it. I think it's going to be a growing process for like Stanford and Cal trying to figure out logistically how to make this work for student athletes and the travel. And I think there'll be some growing pains and some tough years, and then hopefully get it figured out where it's like, we know when we need to leave, we know how to schedule to make things work better and things like that. So I have confidence that there's smart enough people in charge, at least in the softball world, that are going to make this the best for the student athlete. I just, the tradition and just seeing all of that go away is tough to swallow. As a change is hard. And especially when you're having to change because of a whole different entity that you're not a part of, which is challenging. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of it, but I'm going to be excited about it, and our sport's going to be just fine. And we'll still play great softball, and there's going to be great competition. And I heard somebody say on a broadcast, I can't remember who it was, that maybe like UCLA, Arizona, and Stanford can have like a preseason Pac-12 tournament, you know, because they'll all be in different conferences and
stuff
like that. So I think we'll hopefully see some creativity and still get some of that magic.
Yeah, I hope so. I think you're right. Two things can be true at the same time, right? It can be sad and a little frustrating, but then there can be positives out of it too. I'm glad, for example, that Stanford and Cal are going together because they have that rivalry. And same with like the Arizona schools. And, you know, unfortunately, that's not the case with everybody, like the Oregons. But Oregon and Washington will still have their kind of rivalry going on. USC, UCLA, which USC doesn't matter for us softball players yet. Right. But that's a whole other thing. Yeah. There's lots of layers to it for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm putting you through the ringer with this. You only have one more.
I love it.
I just realized these are tough ones, one after the other for you. But the last one is hopefully a fun one. Bat flips. Safer out.
Genuine bat flips, safe. Like if I can tell that you're just in the heat of the moment and, you know, you're just excited, it's a walk off, you know, and it's just natural. It's not a forced kind of animation, or you're down by three runs in the fourth inning and then you're flipping the bat. I want something that's just instinctual, natural, big moment. You can't control your excitement. It's for your team. The rehearsed bat flips, I'm out. Yeah. And I can tell when it's not natural. And I can tell when you're trying to do it, force this to happen. I'm out on those. But if you're in a big moment, you want to show some excitement, you did something big, yeah. But within, you know, sportsmanship and being respectful, go do it. You earned it. But I don't want to see it in the second inning. And I don't want to see it just like because you practice it in BP.
Yeah, practicing it is a little wild, I think. Right. And you can tell that some people do. Not everything can be Korean baseball, because that was actually really entertaining to see their bat flip. But, you know, like I saw somebody bat flip this past weekend when they were getting run ruled. And they hit, like, I think it was a solo shot. If not, they were still getting run ruled, even if it was like a two run or a three run. And I was like, okay, I don't know about that.
To me, that's just like selfishness. It's just like, it's all about me kind of thing. And maybe they're not selfish. Maybe they're the best team player. But
it comes across that way, even if it's not.
Just let it be natural. I wasn't the type of player. I don't think I would ever bat flip. I didn't really celebrate, or like, I wasn't that kind of emotional kind of player. My dad always was like, act like you expected to do it. Put your head down, run bases. Act like I expected to do it. I'll hold it all in. But no, I'm excited that players get to show this emotion now. It makes the game makes it fun. I love when pitchers, especially Nyjah Kennedy, when she strikes it, she's got that stomp. And, you know, that's not too much. You can tell that's legit, genuine. She's excited, that kind of stuff. I'm all for it. It makes the game even more exciting. But the showboating, I'm not a fan of.
Well, when they point to their teammates, you can tell. Like, to your point, Nigel Stomp, she'll point at Ali Kaneshiro, our catcher, right? And you're like, okay, that's, you guys are really in sync. And you can, to your point, kind of tell the difference for sure. Yeah. Would you, if ever there was a scenario where you were hitting off Taren and you hit a home run, would you bat flip on Taren?
Yeah. Because if I ever hit a home run off the tear, that's something to celebrate. I'm already going to be in trouble for hitting the home run. Might as well put the cherry on top.
Yeah. I love it. You're like, it's not really my style, but yes, definitely against my wife.
That one, for sure. Because that probably will never, ever happen. So I can say it in a dreamland or imaginary terms for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it'll be obnoxious one.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Absolutely. Well, I think that's the perfect note to end on right there.
Yeah. Those are some good hot topics. I like that. Nice.
Yeah, good. I mean, I'm glad, because it's meant to be fun. And I love hearing from people like you, right, who have so many different perspectives on the game. Like, tell me your thoughts. So thanks for humoring me on that.
Well, thanks for letting me give my opinion. I don't get that often.
Of course. Well, thank you for doing this whole thing too. So fun. I'm really glad we got to do it.
Thanks for having me.
It was great talking with Brittany. You know, we've been following each other on Twitter for a while, actually. We both love the game as former players. We both want to grow it as media professionals now. And like I said before, the coast-to-coast connection is really cool. Just to understand the size and the growth of our sport. So with that, let's transition to the foul tip of the week. This week's foul tip is about watering your own grass. We always hear the saying, you know, the grass is greener on the other side. And we know that this is all about perspective, because the grass in reality is greener wherever you water it. But we always hear the saying as well, bloom where you're planted. So, you know, wherever your starting point is, whatever hand you're dealt, wherever you're at, make the best of it and make the best you in it. And that takes effort. You know, that takes a lot of quote unquote watering. And the more I talk to coaches and players, the clearer it gets that it's all about what you water, what you spend your time and energy on, because it does manifest. So don't worry about what other people are doing or things you can't control. You know, that's watering other grass. That's not going to help you or those connected to you. And that's not to say you can't help other people. The point is that maybe the better way to help people is to start small with yourself. A ripple effect might start small, but it can be positive or negative. And don't you want that impact that you make, that you start, to be positive once it gets to that larger impact? And for me, this also means appreciating our roots, you know, seeing what Rhiannon Potke has done with Goods for Greatness, how she gives back to her hometown area. But then she also lives in Tennessee and has worked with Tennessee softball to donate in that local area. So she just waters her own grass wherever it is, you know, and if you take care of your roots, you can grow from there, right? And Brittany also has made a career out of her ACC roots. And you want to grow the game where you competed, where you grew up? She's a good example of watering her roots. Because you don't just water the leaves and expect it to grow, right? You water the soil, the foundation, and the rest gets what it needs. So that's it. Water your own grass. That's the foul tip of the week. You've been listening to Believe in Softball, part of Believe Network and presented by Bet Online. The show is available anywhere you get your podcasts, wherever you listen, including Believe.com and YouTube too. Subscribe to the show, rate the show, and if you liked it, write a review for it. Follow us on Twitter/X and Instagram at Believe in Softball. Again, that's B-L-E-A-V. And you can reach out to me personally on Twitter/X at JennaBecerra01 and Instagram at JennaBecerra as well. As always, thank you for tuning in and catch you soon.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.